This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on January 12, 2017. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Ann?
I'm great, thank you.
Right, great.
Have a good new year, everybody.
I want to welcome all of you to the first open meeting of 2017. I hope this is a healthy and enriching year for everyone. I'm pleased and honored to serve as chairman of the commission this year, and I pledge to do my best to ensure the commission continues to fulfill its crucial mission of protecting the integrity of our federal campaign finance system, and particularly in providing the public with campaign finance information in the quickest and most accessible and complete manner as possible, as well as fairly and equitably enforcing the campaign finance laws under the Commission's jurisdiction. I would like to offer a positive note regarding the work of the Commission and its dedicated employees. As I'm sure most of you know, the creation of the FEC arose out of the Watergate scandal in the early 1970s, and this agency and the laws that it administers have undergone numerous changes over the past several decades. Despite these changes often resulting from court decisions that dramatically impact these laws, I believe there are still important aspects of our work that may unfortunately be obscured by the various controversies that have garnered considerable media attention over the recent years. During my tenure as a commissioner, I have had the good fortune of visiting several nations, principally in Central and South America, Europe, and Northern Africa. I have learned firsthand about the electoral systems in those nations, including how campaigns are funded and how money is disclosed. From all I know of campaign finance globally and from what I have experienced, in my view, there is no campaign finance disclosure system in the world that can match the level of transparency maintained by the FEC. This agency stands out on the world stage for ensuring complete, accurate, and timely disclosure of receipts and disbursements of money in federal campaigns, and it has performed this function in a remarkably consistent and thorough fashion for more than 40 years. Those who are quick to criticize the FEC should understand that it accomplishes the goal of transparency in an exceedingly effective and accurate manner. Perhaps one of the most valuable aspects of our disclosure system is the manner in which we process and review the filings we receive. The FEC has approximately 11,000 entities that file reports on a periodic basis required by law. Of those, approximately 150,000 filings occur in a two-year election cycle and are put on the public record within 24 to 48 hours of receipt by law. Each of these filings is reviewed by a campaign finance analyst, and the filer is promptly notified if any issues arise with respect to the accuracy of the filings. Last year, our Reports and Analysis Division, which we commonly refer to as RAD, reviewed close to 24 million pages, and filers were contacted by RAD 17,000 times, either by email or paper mail, asking them to clarify their filings in order to remedy any inaccuracies or omissions. In addition, RAD provides assistance to filers, provided assistance to filers 14,360 times last year through phone calls and meetings. There's no agency in any other country that requires filings in a way that the FEC does or that reviews the filings in advance of the election with such thoroughness. By this alone, hundreds if not thousands of misstatements, which could otherwise lead to be seen as potentially serious violations, are corrected at the outset, significantly reducing the number of cases which would otherwise come before the Commission through formal enforcement process. Our campaign finance system is not without its flaws, and there certainly is more that can be done by Congress to promote transparency. For example, because there is currently no law requiring the Senate candidates to file electronically, most Senate filings are received in paper form, resulting in certain processing delays. I would hope that the Senate will soon follow on what most candidates in the House of Representatives have done for many years and file the reports electronically in order to provide more immediate and useful public disclosure. Regarding the goal of fairly enforcing campaign finance laws, it seems that the Commission is often judged by how much money is generated from fines and settlements, which have seen a marked decline in recent years. While I personally believe the Commission should take a more robust approach in a way it interprets the laws, in many cases, it should be borne in mind that a lack of consensus on some important issues is directly tied to Congress's decision to structure the agency such that no more than three of the six commissioners are from the same political party, and to require a minimum of four votes for most decisions. I believe there should be more of a focus on the remarkable level of unanimity achieved by the Commission regarding numerous decisions made on a day-to-day basis. Moreover, while I recognize that commissioners may hold widely divergent views of the laws governing campaign finance, I am hopeful that this year we can find common agreement and work as one body to effectively interpret and enforce these laws. Turning to management, we have yet to receive a consensus on some important management decisions that would improve this agency's efficiency and fairness of administration. These include proposals that I believe would be welcomed by our staff. I am painfully aware of the low staff morale rating seen in recent years and have been a strong advocate for more to be done in that regard. This week, Commissioner Peterson and I had the opportunity to discuss morale issues with the FEC staff during several informal sessions. We were encouraged that so many employees chose to participate and offer their candid views. We heard many earnest comments about specific problems, along with thoughtful suggestions on how to improve employee satisfaction. We intend to give these immediate and serious consideration, and I'm committed to doing everything I can to make the FEC a better place to work. Finally, I want to commend and thank our wonderful staff, which I consider to be as fine as exists in any government agency. We have employees who have served here for decades and have devoted their careers to furthering the agency's mission. Our employees, who come from a wide variety of backgrounds, work very hard every day to help us achieve our goals. However, they also confront challenges in the workplace for which they have no responsibility. While we need to move forward in certain areas of management, our employees deserve to be respected and applauded for helping the agency continue its impressive work during these tumultuous times. Their collective efforts serve to preserve and strengthen our democracy. So I'm very proud to be chairman this year, and let's get to work. Yes, Madam Vice Chair.
If I may, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say I'm looking forward to working with you as vice chair this year. We've already had several productive meetings, and I'm pleased to hear about the meetings that Commissioner Peterson and you had with the staff yesterday and the day before. I agree with virtually everything you just said, and I appreciate your calling the staff, explaining how the staff has helped promote the goal of transparency of this agency, and celebrating the fact that we do have a campaign finance system that far exceeds those of the rest of the world, and also your goal of trying to make the place a better place to work for the staff. And I applaud you on your goal of trying to move things forward in a collegial manner, and I certainly look forward to working with you in this regard throughout the year. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll call on you anytime. Madam Vice Chair, do we have a late submitted document?
Yes. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that the Commission may consider Draft Advisory Opinion 2016-21, Agenda Document 16-58-C, also called Draft C.
We have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Now we'll begin with agenda document 1658A, 1658B, and the new draft document. Do we have an opening discussion at this point?
Thank you, Chairman Walther. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 16-58A, B, and C are alternative draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by Great America PAC. The requester is a non-connected hybrid political committee. It planned to hire individuals and vendors to contact potential voters through phone banks to expressly advocate the election of presidential candidate Donald Trump, and it intends to engage in similar activities in future elections. It anticipates that some of the individuals will have performed similar work for a candidate or state or national party committee within the previous 120 days. The requester asks several questions about its proposed employment of persons who have previously been employed by a candidate or political party, and whether certain communications made by those employees or by the requester would constitute coordinated communications. The drafts all conclude that the proposed communications would be coordinated communications if the employees in question used information from their prior employment in their work for the committee or conveyed such information to the committee, and the information was material to the creation, production, or distribution of the communications. We did not receive any comments on the request or on any of the drafts, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Is there any discussion? If not, are we prepared for a motion? Do we hear a motion?
I move approval of agenda document number 16-58-C, draft C.
Can we have such a motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Hearing none, the motion passes 6-0. The next matter is Socialist Workers' Party agenda document 17-01-A. There's been a request to hold the matter over, and I would propose that we support holding it over until February 23rd, which is the last open session meeting in February, and hopefully that will be enough time to provide a response.
Steve, I couldn't hear the last thing. Did you say that we've heard back that that's enough time, or that we're waiting to hear back?
Hopefully that'll be enough
time.
Okay.
And then just for the record, that the requests are asked to be delayed.
Is that yes, they have. I'm
okay.
Sorry to make
it that. It wasn't the commission. It was the requester.
I just yes,
make
that's
clear.
Correct. Okay. I don't know if we need a motion to do that, but just to be safe, all in favor of supporting that extension?
Aye.
Opposed? None. So that passes 6-0.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The requester had asked for the consideration to be on a particular date in March. Would you like us, would the commission like us to inform them that the commission intends to consider it not on that date, but on the date that was just
That's mentioned? A good idea, and I think also we can see where they stand at that point. Maybe they'll be fine. Maybe they'll need more time. We'll have to see.
Right. We'll let them know.
All right, thanks. Next item on the agenda was proposed by Commissioner Weintraub. And that's agenda document 16-40-A. Would you like to proceed?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the continuation of an issue that I've been talking about for the better part of a year now, and in some ways going back to 2010. I want to make it clear that this is an issue that has been of concern to at least some commissioners, really since Citizens United, the potential that with more corporate spending and renewed avenues for corporations to be directly intervening in elections, that this could provide a pathway for foreign actors to try and use corporations as a pathway to influence our elections. And this is something that I've been concerned about for quite a while, long predating a lot of the news that we have heard in recent months and in recent days about foreign actors who are plainly willing to take some very aggressive and innovative steps to try and influence our elections. So this is not a response to that, but I have to say that having continually read about this in the papers and heard what our security agencies have said about this, I am even more concerned now than I was when I started. So for those who were not following along in all of its painful detail, we had proposals on the table as far back as 2011 to try and address this topic that we could not get 4 votes to move forward in a rulemaking. Last year in March, I wrote an op-ed on this topic with the cooperation of then-Chairman Peterson. I convened a hearing last summer, brought in a bunch of experts to talk about issues related to foreign influence in our elections. And, you know, not all of them had the same ideas. Not all of them had the same ideas that I had, but I think there was a high level of concern demonstrated by a wide range of people on this topic. I brought forward a proposal at the beginning of September to start a rulemaking, and my colleagues said that they thought it was too vague. So I narrowed it down and brought another proposal forward that was more targeted, that focused in on issues related to percentage of foreign ownership, board membership of corporations, foreign government ownership, the type of corporation, and implementation measures. And I also, at that time, offered to take off the table issues related to PAC spending, because that seemed to be something that was of particular concern to my colleagues. And I was hoping to find a path forward by doing that. And as I said at the time, and I'm happy to say again, none of this was ever intended to address media corporations. I have a list of issues in my memorandum of September 28th, 2016, which I placed on the agenda for today, that I think is ripe for consideration. It's been out there for a long time now, and when I presented this, my colleagues asked for more time, and I went back and had several conversations with my colleagues, and every time the answer was, we need more time. So in December, I said, okay, but I'm putting it on the agenda in January because I think we've had enough time to think about this and to decide how to move forward. So what I would like to do is to make a motion that would incorporate that we launch a rulemaking that would incorporate all of the ideas in my memorandum of September 28th, would also put out for public comment some ideas that were first proposed in 2011, but Chair Walther incorporated into a memorandum on September 15th. Of last year, and my Republican colleagues also put out a proposed policy statement on September 15th, and I propose that we include those ideas as well, put it all out for public comment, see what the public has to say about all this, and see if there's a path forward to address what I consider to be the very important issue of ensuring that our elections are free of foreign influence. You know, I don't want to pick on anybody. We've heard about Russian activity. We've heard about Chinese activity. There are a lot of companies out there that have ownership that's a little bit obscure, that may have ties to foreign governments, and some of these companies have been actively trying to buy up properties in the United States. And I think we need to be concerned about how those companies that are owned or controlled by foreign nationals and in some cases foreign governments, and in some cases we don't even know who's owning or controlling them, are spending money or have the potential to spend money in our elections. The problem is exacerbated by the fact that there is so much spending that we still don't know where it's coming from. According to Open Secrets, since the 2010 cycle, over $800 million in dark money has been spent in our elections. We don't know who's behind that. I would prefer to address that topic directly to tackle dark money and to improve transparency on political spending. But every time that topic has come up, either in the enforcement context or the policy, the rulemaking context, there have not been four votes to go forward on that. So I think at a minimum, if we can't figure out everything about the money that's being spent in our elections, we ought to at least take steps to ensure that it's not being spent by foreigners or by companies that are owned or controlled by foreigners. So we've been here before. We've had this discussion before. That's my proposal, is that we take everybody's ideas and put them out for public comment and see what the public has to say about this. And, you know, maybe they'll have some additional good ideas for us that we could consider to move this process forward.
Okay, we have a motion on the table. Any further discussion?
Did you make a motion?
I described a motion. I am happy to.
I'm not suggesting you need to make it right now.
No, I'm happy to do so. I formally move that we open a rulemaking and that it include, as I said, all the ideas in my memorandum, the chairman's memorandum, my colleague's memorandum, and we put it all out for public comment and have the staff draft appropriate regulatory text to put out for public comment to match up with the ideas in those memoranda and see if we can move the ball forward.
Comment?
I'm prepared to vote on the motion.
Okay. Madam Vice Chair.
There's no other comment. I would
no further
make a comment.
Comment. Any comment?
Mr. Chair.
I think Ann wants to say something.
Oh, excuse me.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead,
please. If there's no other comment, I'm sorry. Thank you. I will be supporting the motion, and I think that for us to purely have a discussion regarding these issues that incorporates all of the suggestions from every member of the commission, as well as incorporating what the public believes about these matters and thinks about what would be appropriate in the rulemaking, is really important for us to do. I mean, I don't want to repeat what Commissioner Weintraub has said, but it seems to me that if this commission cannot even reflect on the serious issues that are facing our country in the campaign finance arena, then we are not doing the duty that you, Mr. Chairman, spoke about right in the opening comments about the crucial mission of protecting the integrity of the nation's campaign finance system. So it seems to me that this motion has been significantly narrowed from previous motions that were criticized for being too expansive, and it is a discussion that is a long time coming and really relevant to what we're seeing in the campaign finance arena today. So for that reason, I think we should go forward on the rulemaking. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Any further comment from anyone else? I'll add the comment. I'll support the motion. I'd prefer a more detailed motion, but the bottom line is I've been strongly supportive of the issue of trying to get a hold of it, of the campaign foreign investment in our campaigns for some time. I think the matter became much more complicated with the advent of Citizens United because the participation of corporations in our campaign finance scene now is much more complicated because of the various myriad of ways in which corporations can structure themselves, whether they're by equity ownership, voter ownership, subsidiaries, combinations, such that that methodology now is before us in a way that has not been before. And I think that makes it more difficult for us to actually get a grip on some of the money that's moving through our campaign finance system. So I support that, and if there's nothing further, then we can call for a vote. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Three in favor. Opposed?
No.
Okay. The record shows that Commissioner Goodman, Commissioner Peterson, Vice Chair oppose it, and I support it along with Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Ravel.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm going to try an even narrower proposal, see if we can get support for this. I would hope that we would have agreement that we don't want foreign governments meddling in our elections in particular. So I move that we narrow the proposal to just address issues of that are raised in topic number three in my memorandum, items 7 and 8, that we open a rulemaking to consider what limits, if any, should be considered on the U.S. election spending of corporations owned in whole or in part by foreign governments or state actors, whether there are permissible levels of ownership by foreign governments or state actors in terms of U.S. political spending, and to consider any arguments that militate in favor of spending in U.S. elections by corporations wholly owned by foreign governments or state actors and those opposed, and that we hear from the public on this. I think this is a topic that is really of great interest to a lot of people these days. And we just had a determination that the election apparatus is part of the essential infrastructure of our, as seen by our security agencies in our country. I think the way we fund our elections is similarly critical to our democracy, and we ought to take whatever steps we can to ensure that the spending that goes on in our elections is by U.S. citizens and is not controlled by foreign governments. So I'm moving now to open a rulemaking that will only address the topic of preventing spending by foreign government-owned or controlled corporations.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
That motion was just made. It was part of a larger motion. It failed by a vote of 3-3. I would raise the point of order that that matter has been raised, voted on this meeting, and you cannot address the same issue in the same meeting by making the same motion twice in the same meeting.
I'm not, if I might respond. It's not the same as what I as the earlier motion, since of the earlier motion considered a great many other topics, and it seems to me that we frequently have situations where somebody says, well, I can't support this part, but I might support that part, so it's just a much narrower version of what was just voted on. It strikes me as completely conceivable, perhaps not likely, but completely conceivable that somebody on the other side of the table might say, well, I don't want to address board membership of the corporation or the type of corporation or whether we want to require verifying CVV codes, but I'm willing to tackle the foreign government issue.
That point often arises.
And Mr. Chairman,
that argument often arises in bodies. We are governed by Robert's Rules, and Robert's Rules has a procedure for taking those matters up separately where someone might object to one section but another, and that's a motion for a division of the question. There is an alternative mechanism which was available, that may have been available, and that was to take up matters seriatim. But a division of the question would have permitted that, taking those matters up separately. The mover chose not to take that procedural route, so we have now voted on this. This has been defeated, and it is improper. This second motion is improperly placed before the body.
Thank you, Mr. Weintraub.
Mr. Chairman, I'm really surprised by this because we don't usually do business that way at this commission. I cannot recall anybody ever raising that type of point of order in the 14 years that I have been on this agency. I have never encountered that. So I will ask our counsel whether the motion is in order or whether I would have to bring it back at a subsequent meeting. But are you that determined to not vote on my motion?
We just voted. Mr. Chairman, this is a chair's call on
Robert's
rules.
I'll try and keep control here. What was your comment?
This is the chairman's call.
Well, I want to take a look at our parliamentary, but honestly, I didn't have a copy of the motion in front of me at the moment. So, are you saying topic 2 and topic 4 are out and topic 3 is in?
Yes, it's just on topic 3.
Just on topic 3.
Just on topic 3. And I would like to inquire of our attorneys as to whether there's anything improper about my motion.
Okay.
And as I said, if it's improper today, could I bring it back at a subsequent meeting? If my colleagues really refuse to vote on it today and they would like me to bring it back at a subsequent meeting, I'll do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'll yield on my point of order. You can proceed to a vote.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chairman, I do have questions of Commissioner Weintraub.
Sure.
Okay. Commissioner Goodman.
I watched Senator McCain's Foreign Affairs Committee hearing, and I watched the nation's intelligence officials present. You said that foreign governments, we've just seen examples of them trying to interfere in our elections. And I listened very carefully for them trying to use the mechanisms that you're trying to address. Have you read the intelligence report issued publicly last week?
I have not. I read newspaper reports.
Are you aware that it identifies the threats of foreign governments trying to influence our electoral discussion through propaganda and other mechanisms? You know what those mechanisms are?
Well, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'll ask you a question, Commissioner Goodman. Can you
Commissioner Goodman.
Assure the American people that in the $800 million of dark money that has been spent on our elections since Citizens United, that you know for a fact that none of that was owned or controlled by foreign governments?
I can assure you that if they did, it was against the law. And that the current law has captured that activity in the past, including the DNC and Clinton scandals of 1996, where people did funnel money through. Some of it was believed to be derived from the Chinese government. And all of those people who remained in the United States were caught and punished under the existing laws that I have voted for. So that's an answer to your question to my question. But do you know what the experts on this subject, our national intelligence agencies, the FBI, the NSA, and others have projected to be the strategies that the Russians and others plan on taking to influence American politics going forward?
I can see you have a piece of paper in your hand and you're dying to read from it, Commissioner, so go ahead.
I take it you don't know.
Let's learn.
I told you I haven't read the report.
Okay. I'm going to ask for this. We've had these times in the past where communication is broken down and it kind of turns into a non-productive, sometimes pejorative atmosphere, and I think that I'd like to start off by keeping some semblance of order. And Commissioner Goodman, would you like to make a further comment, and then we can proceed?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Are you saying I cannot ask the movement questions about the motion?
I'm not saying you can't, but I think in terms of keeping order, I'd like to just keep order when you do that.
Mr. Chairman, do you intend to keep order by recognizing people for questions and answers or by shutting down questions
Sometimes I do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, our nation's experts have identified the way in which foreign governments intend to continue influencing our elections in the future. It's in this public report. And it's through public media and online communications. Not once has our national intelligence apparatus told us that they intend to do so through the mechanisms that the Chinese tried to use in 1996. And so I ask you, how is your proposal that's pending here today tailored to what our national experts tell us are the strategies that have been used and are intended to be used?
It is not tailored to that report. It is tailored to a larger problem, which is A, we know that foreign governments are interested in influencing our elections and are every day coming up with new strategies to do so. And B, we have jurisdiction about campaign finance. There are things that we cannot address and there are things that we can address. And, I read your proposal that you put out with your colleagues to suggest that, or rather to state that, if a domestic subsidiary was wholly owned by any foreign entity, as long as it was based in the United States and had United States-based money and there were United States actors who were at least nominally in charge of the spending, that you were okay with that, even if it was 100% owned by a foreign government. So I don't, you know, I'm seeing some inconsistencies between what I'm hearing you say at the table today and what I read in your proposal. But I'm happy to put all of that out, as I said, for public comment, and let's see what the public thinks about your ideas and my ideas.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see an NPRM as a competition to see what they think about your ideas versus my ideas. There needs to be a demonstrated predicate to show that this is a necessary rulemaking for this body to act responsibly to move forward, where this body identifies a particular need. Now, I would ask, since I believe and I have voted in the past on a policy clarifying existing law and the prohibitions of existing law, and I have shown how existing law has been fully adequate to capture, identify, and punish people who try to circumvent those laws, including foreign governments in the 1996 cases, I would ask, where is the factual predicate? Since someone, Commissioner Weintraub, you're proposing that we issue an NPRM calling for a change in existing law, you bear the burden of demonstrating an evidentiary basis that there is need to do this. So do you have an example of a wholly owned U.S. company, wholly owned by a foreign government, that is making contributions or expenditures in our election system today?
Commissioner Weintraub.
Commissioner Goodman, there has never been a standard in this agency that in order to launch a rulemaking, we have to first amass an evidentiary record. This reminds me of your standard for launching investigations in the enforcement context, where you seem to insist that other people do the investigations and provide us with evidence before we can even launch an investigation. Now we're importing that notion into the rulemaking context. We need to have an evidentiary basis for launching a rulemaking before we can put ideas out for public comment. And actually, I think it is a competition. I think that is part of what the rulemaking process is about. It's about allowing the public to weigh in on issues of importance. Now, maybe you don't think this is important. Maybe you don't see this as a problem. That's fine. You can vote it down.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, point personal, yeah. It's not that I don't believe it's important. This is an important issue. My position all along, and we articulated this when we had this vote last year, was that I believe that the existing laws make what you're proposing already illegal and are adequate to capture cheaters.
Okay. Any further comment, Commissioner Vice Chair?
I think this is yet another example of different ways of interpreting the statute. And this one is along with the lines of what Commissioner Goodman was saying. There is a limit on our authority to promulgate rules. Right in FECA, powers of the commission, and it's the previous provision 437D, and now it's 30107A8. Powers of the commission, specific authorities. The commission has the power to develop such prescribed forms and to make, amend, and repeal such rules as are necessary to carry out the provisions of this act. We look at administrative agencies, the bureaucracy, as having limits placed on them by Congress. Our limits are specifically in the statute saying that we may do a rulemaking, but as necessary to carry out the provisions. What Commissioner Goodman is saying, and I agree, is that the burden isn't on the public to prove to you that there's nothing bad going on here. The burden is on us to determine whether some rulemaking is necessary to further the purpose of the act. And as Commissioner Goodman pointed out, there is no evidence that you have said or is in any of the national intelligence reports that a foreign government has tried to undermine our system. And if there is evidence, then we certainly would consider opening a rulemaking. It's a completely different burden of proof. And it doesn't surprise me to hear that your view of the regulatory authority is broad, sweeping, and that, again, the public has the burden of demonstrating that, once again, you know, nothing, no matter what we do, is going to be good enough for you because you've decided and you've even stated in the New York Times article that you authored that this distinction that you describe about taking on Citizens United provides ways to, quote, blunt the impact of the decision that gave corporations the right to spend unlimited sums of money on federal elections. So everybody knows that your grandstanding here is part of an effort to blunt the impact of the United States Supreme Court decision.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I resent your...
That's what you said.
I said that. I didn't say that I was grandstanding. That is your very personal attack on me, and I resent that. And I resent your implication that I am not sincere in my desire to prevent foreign influence on elections, and that I'm not sincere in my concern that we are not doing enough to prevent that influence. And I don't think that I'm alone. And I do not think that it's the public's burden to persuade us not to act, but I do think the public has a role to play in what we do and that their views matter and that we should take their views into account. And I think you're, frankly, a little bit afraid to hear what the public comments might be if we were to put this out for public comment. We plainly have a statutory basis to do this. There is a law on the books that prevents direct and indirect foreign influence in our elections. This is a topic that's been discussed at great length in the public arena recently. And as I said, we have seen very innovative ways that foreign actors have tried to intervene. We have seen reports, and again, I can't certify as to the accuracy or not of what I read in the newspaper, but I've certainly seen reports in by investigative reporters that indicate that there are foreign actors who are using corporate vehicles to spend money in our elections. So I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. And we have seen some very aggressive maneuvers by various foreign entities, and I think that we owe it to the public to take on this issue. You know, you don't want to do it? That's fine.
I missed the second to the last thing you said.
Madam Vice Chair.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
I just was reading something when you said the second to last thing. You said that there is evidence that foreign nationals have – I just missed what you said.
Well, I'm not sure what you're referring to, but what I said was the there have been reports that I can't verify from personal knowledge, but there have certainly been reports in the newspapers of foreign actors funneling money through corporate entities to try and influence our elections.
Are you talking about the Intercept article?
That is certainly an example of that.
Is that what you're specifically talking about?
That is one specific example, yes.
Is there another one? I'm just curious. Is there another one?
I don't have another one off the top of my head. And we have also seen innovative and aggressive maneuvers by foreign actors to try and influence our elections. And I am concerned that I see no reason other than, you know, whether they have the money to spend in this way, why entities that are not that are plainly interested in trying to influence our elections and are using a lot of other aggressive and innovative tools to do so would not, if we give them the leeway and the opening to do so, also use our campaign finance system to do so. And as I said, you know, $800 million in dark money, and we don't know where it came from, so none of us is in a position to say here at this table today that we can, you know, absolutely guarantee that none of that came from foreign actors. We just don't know where it came from.
I'm going to add a comment at this point. I'll support the motion, but I think it's not going to pass, and so I can see to say support the motion. I really think if we're going to get into this, the other issues that were covered by Commissioner Weintraub would have to be included in order to have a sensible, a truly sensible approach toward the topic. Board membership is not as important as stock ownership when it comes to corporations. It's stock ownership can be in various forms, and it can be indirect, and it can be partially non-voting, and it can be some voting and some not voting on certain topics. So it can be very complex. But the bottom line is who governs the money in a corporation, not so much who spends it, but who governs it. And that's really, I think, the nub of what we'd want to go to if we wanted to take a look at this further. I think because of Citizens United and the influx of corporate spending, we should do that and at least hear from people who are really on this. I practiced law for a few years, and I certainly have seen the attempt to acquire control through quiet ways in using stock ownership or LLCs that own a part of this, but the LLC is really owned by somebody else, and that they happen to own another an LLC that owns another 30% of the company. And so I think we owe responsibility to try and be able to go that route if we decide we want to do that. So I'll support the motion. Go ahead.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub referenced, or I asked you, and then you then referenced the Intercept article. And, you know, obviously we can't get into details of pending enforcement matters before us, but there are a number of them, and we agreed at the meeting in September to expedite those. And as you know, some of them are, we just received them in the recent past, and we're committed on our side of the aisle, and I'm sure you are too, to getting those matters done quickly. I can't talk about the Intercept article, and you could probably read between the lines, but we're happy to consider any and all enforcement matters that come before us. And again, we expedited these matters in particular.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Peterson.
I just wanted to weigh in with just a couple comments. When deciding whether or not to undertake a rulemaking, it often turns on whether or not, we believe that there's a certain quantum of evidence that's been presented that justifies undertaking that that rulemaking, and that may vary on a commissioner by commissioner basis. As I've been studying this issue and looking at whether the integrity of the foreign national contribution ban has been either undermined or at least the changing circumstances that resulted from the Citizens United decision requires or demands that we revisit how robust the existing provision still is. I've been looking at has there been evidence that the tools that we already have in our possession, in our statute and in our regulations, are they adequate to deal with foreign nationals who may be making contributions? And as of yet, I haven't seen evidence that those tools aren't adequate. And also, we've all been reading the papers, we've all been reading the news about hacking and other efforts that may have been undertaken to sway the election. But none of those involve campaign finance. They don't involve making contributions or expenditures that fall under our jurisdiction. And so I understand the concern about efforts to undermine our election system, but we are limited to the jurisdiction that we oversee, which is the campaign finance laws. And there hasn't been any evidence that we've seen on that front. And moreover, there was an interesting I should mention the concern that we are considering with respect to the proposal that's before us really does focus on business corporations, many of which are publicly traded, commercial enterprises, and the concerns about whether or not foreign ownership or at least significant ownership of stock in those companies could impact our campaign finance system in some way. Ken Doyle, who's here covering this event, put out an interesting and I think very thoroughly researched article yesterday talking about, and it's titled Soft Money Era Not Back Yet as Few Companies Contribute. And it goes on to talk about how less than 1% of disclosed contributions to major super PACs have come from publicly held corporations, how I think the estimate is that about roughly 3.5% of money spent in independent spending in the last, I think it mentions in this case, the 2014 election cycle were spent by trade associations or Section 501c4 organizations. And that, just to quote his number, it mentioned that in 2014, only 36 publicly held companies made any contributions to super PACs in the 2014 election cycle, and that amount consisted of $4.6 million in total. In 2016, there were 33 contributions totaling $5.3 million, and it says less than 1% of total super PAC receipts. And just for some sort of context, by contrast, Tom Steyer, who was a wealthy donor to super PACs himself, contributed $86.3 million, and Sheldon Adelson contributed $77.7 million. So at this particular time, the amount of spending by publicly traded corporations, by commercial businesses, has really amounted to just a very, very small amount of the total spending. And so I think that that somewhat mitigates the overall concern about whether or not these are now being used to funnel millions upon millions upon millions of dollars into our campaign finance system. Now, that could change. I think that article also talks about how that there were a few companies that did. Maybe the factual record that the commission has access to will change. Maybe new allegations will arise, and I think we, as decision makers on this law and on this provision in particular, always have to be open to considering new evidence and new information that may come before us. But at this particular point, the quantum of evidence that I see before us, I don't think justifies opening a rulemaking at this time. And like I said, I know that what that standard is can be different from commissioner to commissioner. But as Commissioner Hunter mentioned, we have the opportunity currently as commissioners to see how well and how adequate our statutory and regulatory bans on foreign national contributions will operate in actual cases that are before the commission. And I think that will be helpful to undertake that exercise to see how this is proceeding.
Commissioner Ravel, do you have your hand up? Commissioner Ravel, are you awake?
Sorry, I had the phone on mute. Yes,
sorry,
I'm awake.
Kidding only.
I'm there.
Do you have any comment at this point in our discussion? I don't want
to. No, I'm fine. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Goodman.
So it is important, I believe, that before we leap into a rulemaking, there be some factual need to do so, an evidentiary basis that the existing rules are inadequate. And I'm not hearing that. So the current motion is focused on an American company that would make contributions or expenditures that is owned wholly by a foreign government. And
wholly or in part.
Okay. And if you are saying in part, then I propose what you're proposing is that if a sovereign wealth fund of a foreign company owns some stock purchased of a publicly traded company, that we would go down the road of defining either some percentage or some other mechanism to say some degree of foreign ownership in a publicly traded American corporation traded on the New York Stock Exchange may be prohibited from exercising its rights under Citizens United. I would need a stronger evidentiary basis before I took away the First Amendment rights recognized by the Supreme Court in the Citizens United decision to say that the current rules are being abused. So but I hear none. And the only example you've given is one article that didn't deal with an American corporation, which happened to be closely held by a foreign government, but by an individual business owner or a small group of business owners who happened to be foreign. So I've heard no evidentiary basis that would support this pending motion. Second, before I would vote to issue an NPRM, I would want to be confident that it is statutory-based and that it is permitted under our existing statutes. And we have a definition of what a foreign national is. And it is tied to the Foreign Agents Registration Act and the definition there. And I don't see any room in the definition of foreign national for us to begin interpreting a foreign national based on some partial ownership by a foreign interest. The definition has been quite clear for a long time. Nor do I see in the definition of foreign national a foreign principle in the Foreign Agents Registration Act the ability for this agency to begin setting those percentages that you've contemplated in these, because everywhere of the law sets a percentage basis, some bright line rule, it's always been done by Congress. If you look at the FCC licensure rules, Congress set a 20% ownership rule. It wasn't done by regulation of the FCC. It was done by Congress. Same thing at the SEC. In all the laws that do that, Congress has drawn that line. Congress has chosen not to do that. They had the option to do so when they tightened the rules in BCRA. And then from everyone involved, they said that BCRA did not alter this definition. So that leaves, under FARA, I don't even see how you would distinguish between an American corporation traded on the U.S. Stock Exchange that has some percentage ownership by a sovereign wealth fund purchased on the open market versus a corporation that has foreign individual owners. But that's what this motion suggests that we do by singling out foreign government only ownership. And so I don't see how the statute and the definition of foreign principal, which is our definition of foreign national, can be altered in that way through regulation. What that leaves you with is the issue of indirect involvement of the foreigners in the American corporation's political activities and the regulatory implementation of indirect. Now, Congress said by indirect we didn't intend to reach that foreign ownership as constituting the indirect involvement. So in light of that, this commission has had 40 years of experience in this area, and I believe the mousetrap, the rules this commission has adapted, can capture the examples that you've given and the involvement that you're saying might be occurring, might be, although we have no evidentiary basis that it is. But I believe the current mousetrap we have and the rules against any foreign involvement in an American's political spending here are adequate to capture the harm you think might befall us. And certainly your proposal doesn't address any of the identified threats by the national security apparatus of the United States because you say the wholly owned Russia Today, a foreign-owned media corporation that's identified by our national security apparatus as the principal media for Russian propaganda, is excluded completely from your proposal. And that leaves websites, that leaves international labor unions, which you don't want to address. So you made an allegation that I don't think this is important. I think this is very important. And to underscore the importance of it, and that I believe the current law is adequate, I have revised the proposed policy that I proposed 6 months ago when we last addressed this issue and had a vote. And I would like, Mr. Chairman, at this time to make an amendment in the nature of a substitute to the pending motion.
Have any of us seen this thing?
Mr. Chairman. This is in order.
You needed months and months and months to look at mine, and you expect us to look at something in 5 seconds at the table and vote on it immediately?
Let's wait to be called on before we get into that.
I'll ask my staff to distribute copies. You have seen this before, Commissioner Weintraub, and I have
seen it before.
This is the proposal that we made and voted for approximately 6 months ago.
But I thought you said you amended it.
I have, and I will point out the most important amendment that we have. Not only does it still contain the certification mechanism where an American company that donates to a super PAC would certify their compliance with the foreign national prohibition. Not only does it underscore, as it always did, but we have added a section, new section 3 on page 13, which underscores the prohibition against foreign nationals, and that would include foreign governments, foreign government officials, and foreign citizens, from having any involvement whatsoever in the decisions of American citizens at an American company to engage in political activity. First, the foreign nationals cannot dictate, direct, influence, or have any input into decisions regarding contributions, donations, expenditures, electioneering communications, or other related disbursements. Two, foreign national directors or officers cannot vote on any matters concerning the decisions of U.S. citizens. to make contributions, donations, expenditures, electioneering communications, or other election-related disbursements. 3, foreign nationals cannot select the U.S. citizens who will decide to make contributions, donations, expenditures, electioneering contributions, that should say electioneering communications, or other election-related disbursements. 4, foreign nationals cannot judge or review U.S. citizens for their performance in making contributions, donations, expenditures, electioneering communications, or other election-related disbursements. And so we have crystallized and clarified. Now, all of this is existing law, but we have put that into this document to underscore the breadth of the prohibition on any foreign involvement in the decisions of American citizens and American companies to do this. So I would at this time, Mr. Chairman, move this document as a substitute to the pending motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Ravel.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to emphasize that obviously I have not seen this document. This document has not been forwarded to me, and so I will be objecting.
Yeah, in my opinion, you know, it would be out of order to vote on it today. But
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
In my opinion, it would be out of order to vote on it today under the circumstances of just having seen it. But it's a serious proposal that's very interesting to me, and I think we should, pursue it and perhaps the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
I'm just giving my opinion.
Motion to amend a pending motion is always in order.
Yes, it is.
And I'm following Robert's rules. I have that right to propose an amendment in the nature of a substitute to a pending motion. It's germane. That's really the only standard is germaneness.
Point of order.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Parliamentarians, if Commissioner Goodman moves to amend my motion, does that motion require 4 votes to
it does.
Pass?
Yep. Yes.
So we don't have to consider, we don't have to vote on the substance of your motion until we first vote on whether to allow the substitute.
No, it's a chair's call on whether to call the vote. And it would require 4 votes. No, not to consider it. I expect the chair to give me a vote on my proper motion to amend the pending motion. And at that point, if that fails 3-3, we go right motion. Back to your main motion and have a vote on that.
I'm interested in hearing from our counsel on this.
That's right, though. Yes, right.
We'll take a 5-minute recess. Back in business. Commissioner Ravel, are you with us? Commissioner Ravel?
I'm here.
Okay. We're back in order. And yes, I think the motion to substitute is entitled to consideration. And at this point, it's available to be voted on if somebody wants to. Actually, I didn't know if this was actually a motion at this point, so if you consider it a motion, then. Let's treat it.
Yes, my motion to amend the pending motion is now pending on the floor.
Okay, based on this document. Commissioner Weintraub.
A couple of comments. Addressing Commissioner Peterson's comments earlier, I also read that article and I thought it was very interesting, although, again, it only talks about disclosed money. So we don't know what's in the dark money because we don't know what we don't know. And it's not an insignificant amount of money out there that we don't know what's going into it. And several times both Commissioner Peterson and Commissioner Goodman have suggested that I'm focused in on publicly held corporations, and I'm not. And indeed, that was one of the topics that was brought up at the forum, and it was one of the items that was in my original motion was whether we should, whether and if so, how we should differently address publicly held corporations, privately held corporations, limited liability corporations, and nonprofit corporations and their differing ownership and governance structure. And so I'm not. It was never my intent to limit any of my proposals just to publicly held corporations. I'm bemused by Commissioner Goodman's reference to RT. Every time this topic comes up, Commissioner Goodman complains either that I'm trying to regulate the media or apparently that I'm not trying to regulate the media, and either way, he has a problem with it. I was trying to take it off the table as a controversial subject that we don't, that we could still make progress on the overall issue without bogging ourselves down in that. Further, as I said before, my most recent motion is, you know, based on two paragraphs in a blue document that's been part of the public record and has been in front of you since September. And on numerous occasions since then, I've tried to engage you guys on this topic, and I kept hearing, we need more time, we need more time, we need more time to discuss this amongst ourselves. And then you show up at the meeting, and in the middle of the meeting, you hand us a document. It's not even on the agenda. We haven't even had the motion. I don't even know. I mean, I guess that's another question for counsel is, can we vote on a document that is not officially in front of us because it was not made into an agenda document and was not incorporated into our usual motion to consider late-submitted documents? This is a super late-submitted document. But, you know, I am just I don't know what to say about commissioners who say they need months and months and months to consider each iteration of my proposal, but they can expect me to vote literally 2 minutes' notice. You know, here's a document. Read this and vote on it right now, right this second. And poor Commissioner Ravel's not even at the table with us, and she doesn't have it in front of her at all. So I don't know how you expect us to, you know, you seem to have a very different standard for how much time you need to consider before you're willing to vote on something and how much time you think we ought to be willing to have, you're willing to give us before we vote on something. But, you know, on my very brief perusal of this document, of the amended document, and, you know, yes, I've seen some of it before, but not the part that obviously is brand new, it seems that the citations are all to decisions about PAC spending, and I was particularly trying to avoid the situation of dealing with PAC spending because that money is by definition contributed by U.S. citizens, and when we're talking about corporate spending, that is not the case. And it seems to me that what you're setting up here is, again, a formalistic structure by which a company that is wholly owned by foreigners, foreign nationals, foreign governments, foreign actors, where everyone who is a domestic employee understands that their number one goal is making their parent supervisors happy. And you're setting up some formal structure by which we say that foreign nationals cannot judge or review U.S. citizens for their performance in making contributions, donations, expenditures, electioneering contributions, or other election-related disbursements. But I don't know how – I don't even know what that means, frankly. How do we have jurisdiction to tell some foreign board what they can consider in deciding the compensation package of one of their employees? I don't really understand how this would – work in implementation. So I'm, you know, I'm happy to consider it further for more than 5 minutes. But on first glance, I think it still raises the same problem that I saw with your original proposal, which I am happy to put out for public comment along with my proposals. And I think it would be very illuminating to hear what somebody besides the six of us thinks on this. But it seems to me that it still sets up this formalistic structure where as long as you've got, you know, U.S. citizens who are nominally making the decisions, that you could have a company that is wholly owned by foreign actors making engaging in political spending in this country, and you would be blessing that through this policy. So I would not be able to support that.
Commissioner Goodman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, responding to some of the points made by my colleague. First, about Russia today, the point I make is not that this is your proposal, not mine, but to show that it is your proposal is both under-inclusive and over-inclusive in many ways. And my point is I'm not proposing that we restrict Americans' access to websites such as WikiLeaks, or that we propose censoring those websites or Russia Today or its website. My point is to show that your proposal, in light of what you claim to be recent revelations, is misdirected. And that raises a question for me of what is the true object of your proposal? And I go back to your point, your position in the New York Times article, which is you're trying to clip the wings and countermand a Supreme Court decision, and you found a mechanism to do that. And I say that because otherwise, if foreign influence were the true objective of your proposal here today, I would expect you to be addressing the issues and mechanisms for influencing American public opinion that have been addressed by the experts in this field. That's the reason I use the Russia Today point, is to show that your proposal is misdirected right now on the strategies that foreign governments are using to influence American elections. Now,
that we know about.
As to PAC spending, the rules for PAC spending and U.S. Subsidiary companies' direct spending in elections, those rules have been aligned for 30-plus years because corporations before Citizens United were giving to state and local elections. And so we applied corporate giving rules, including corporate the giving by U.S. subsidiaries of foreign companies. We addressed that using the same regulatory rules that applied to the operation of the SSFs by those companies. Those rules have been aligned. After Citizens United, almost 2 years after Citizens United, 18 months after it, this commission voted by a vote of 5-1, and you voted to apply that this paradigm in this policy to direct contributions by a U.S. subsidiary, Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline GP, owned by Canadian TransCanada, to state elections in Nebraska. And this rule, this mousetrap, this implementation of the statutory prohibition was adequate after Citizens United for direct contributions by a U.S. subsidiary. So this is not just for the first time setting up a structure. This, you referred that I was setting up a structure, some formalistic structure. I'm not setting it up. I'm clarifying its application in the context post-Citizens United to federal elections, that we take the rules that applied to SSFs, we take the rules that applied to U.S. subsidiaries' donations to state and local candidates, and we simply apply all of those prohibitions and the structure in place to capture circumvention of those prohibitions to the same types of expenditures in connection with federal elections. That's what this does. And so and what this amendment to our prior proposal does is it teases out from the precedent before this body over the last 30 years the extent of the prohibitions that have been applied to the involvement of foreign nationals in the decisions of U.S. citizens. Mr. Chairman,
thank you. Further comment? Commissioner Weintraub.
And all I have to say to that is that my suggestion is that these restrictions are not adequate, and that's why I can't support it.
Any further comment, Commissioner Bravo?
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
You know, I will. I'm not going to support it today, but I'm certainly open to supporting it at a later time. This is a very constructive approach, and sometimes you have to make compromises, so we'll just have to see as we go along whether or not We have some cases before us coming up in the next few months, and certainly in the past we've said that's a good springboard to rulemaking, and let's see where it takes us. Somebody to call for a vote. All in favor of the substituted motion, and by the way, do we need to give this an agenda item, or agenda document, or how does that work for the record?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you need to give it an agenda document number, but I do think that we need to accept it for public consumption because we've shared it at this point, and it was not a part of the agenda.
Yes, I understand that. Okay, so it will be considered immediately available to the public.
Correct.
Yeah, of course. All in favor of the unmarked, newly received, substituted document?
Aye.
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 Three in favor. All opposed?
No.
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 Okay, let the record show that the those in favor are the Vice Chair Hunter, Commissioner Goodman, and Commissioner Peterson, and those opposed are Commissioner Ravel, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself. Now, I think we have a next before us.
That's
correct. The next motion before us is the one made by Commissioner Weintraub. Are we ready for a vote on that? Are we done with this debate? So, all in favor of Commissioner Weintraub's motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
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 Okay. The vote is in the reverse. I voted in favor. Commissioner Ravel and Commissioner Weintraub voted in favor and against the Vice Chair, Commissioner Goodman and Commissioner Hunter. Excuse me, and Commissioner Goodman. Did I miss one? Commissioner Peterson.
Peterson.
I think I got them all. A couple of them twice. That's the end of this agenda item. The only item left, I think, I guess, is to approve our I don't know why this is in anyway. I guess there's a point of order that somebody wanted to make before we close the meeting.
I'm sorry, are we going to address this last agenda item, or is that just for
information? It was just handed to me. It was for information only. I didn't realize that.
Voted on that on tally, Mr. Chairman.
So we already approved, but no vote necessary.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a point of personal privilege.
Yes, please do.
Mr. Chairman, departing this week from the Federal Election Commission is a friend and colleague and valued member of our staff, Brandy Zier. Brandy came to work for me almost a year ago, and she had previously practiced in private practice at Wiley Ryan. She had departed to work for the Jeb Bush for President campaign, and after that ended, she came to work here and brought her expertise here to assist me and really the entire commission, because much of the work that we see and debate is the handiwork of exquisite handiwork of Brandy, and she's headed back to the private sector to practice law again at Wiley Ryan with some close friends of many of ours, and particularly with former Chairman Michael Toner, and Jan Barron and Caleb Burns and Andrew Woodson, who worked here. Mm-hmm. So she's joining a good group of people, and she has been a consummate professional. She's been a friend and colleague. She has a very collegial and amiable approach to her work here. It's going to be missed, and I want to wish her Godspeed back in the private sector and facilitating the exercise of First Amendment rights.
Well, thank you very much. Any other comment? Yes, on behalf of all of us, thanks for all the great work, and Godspeed, and we'll be seeing you more, I'm sure. Anything further?
Mr. Chairman, there are no additional matters.
All right, thanks. Meeting's adjourned.